Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to the Building Fortunes radio show and the Citizens for Health radio show segment as well. Every Friday at noon, when we get a chance and Jim Turner is available, we do a show on Citizens for Health. And for those people unfamiliar with that, Citizens has been around since 1993, I believe. Jim Turner is going to be here in just a little bit. He's going to tell you a little bit more about this. But I met Jim Turner about 5 years ago when I was doing an event for a company, and he was a gentleman who was also traveling and visiting in Texas, and we just happened to be in Texas at the same time. And again, about 5 years ago, I met him, and we put him in front of somebody who he did some work with, and then by the time we were finished, I really learned a lot about Jim Turner as an individual, as an attorney as well, and then also in the fight that he does with the Citizens for Health. And that actually invited him to be on our radio show for the Building Fortunes radio show segment when we started it. So I wanted to shine a spotlight on people that were doing the right things in the world, and Jim Turner is certainly one of those people. One of the things you probably want to do is you want to go to citizens.org, C-I-T-I-Z-E-N-S.O-R-G. And when you go to citizens.org, you'll be able to see all the cool things that they do, and then sign up for the newsletter, of course. That's where you'll get your alerts. And one of the special topics we're going to be talking today on is something he's working with called the Maven. So this is a relatively new topic for me as well, so I'll be doing a lot of listening in. But just for those people listening and that want to know a little bit more about the background with Jim Turner, you can go to buildingfortunesradio.com. So again, buildingfortunesradio.com. Go search by show name for either Jim Turner, or go search by show name for the citizens dot, or just citizens, and you'll see it in there as well. And you'll be able to pull up all the previous radio shows that we've done with Jim Turner as well. So we're going to do this. We're going to take a little commercial break. We're waiting on Jim. He said he's going to be a couple of seconds late. We'll be right back. And like I said, we'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Zapney Radio Show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Dr. Gregory Robertson and Peter Mingles. This special segment can be heard again with almost any device by going to buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Zapney is the all-natural treatment for acne. This new product, Zapney, is a product anyone with acne can use with great results after only one treatment. It takes only 15 minutes to apply once a week as needed. Zapney is an all-natural alternative to harsh chemicals that are difficult to apply and can be potentially harmful. You can find out more by going to Zapney.com. When ordering Zapney, please do it through the store for Citizens for Health on the website www.citizens.org or through the link on the Zapney show segment on buildingfortunesradio.com. Dr. Gregory Robertson is here and actively building a sales force to spread the word about Zapney. Visit buildingfortunesradio.com and click on the Zapney Radio Show link to learn more and hear our archived radio shows. Thanks for listening to Zapney Radio. And now back to our show.
Perfect. This is Peter Mingles again. Jim Turner is joining us, and we just ran a commercial that we did once before for a product that's in the citizens.org store. It's called Zapney. And for those people listening in, if you go check out Zapney on Building Fortunes Radio, you'll be able to also hear the radio show that we did with the gentleman, Dr. Gregory Robertson, as well. Fascinating product. Just tells you a little bit about also the types of people that Jim Turner attracts when he does the things that he does with Citizens.org. So, Jim, I just gave us a little bit of an introduction. I said we've probably known each other a little bit more than 5 years, or pretty close to 5 years, as a result of a chance meeting. You were in Dallas. I was in Dallas at exactly the same time. And then we got a chance to hook up and then meet. And then when we started Building Fortunes Radio, I wanted a platform to be able to shine a light on people that are doing the right things in the industry. And, you know, the whole concept of starting something, building it big. We've been doing Building Fortunes Radio now for 5 years, and we have had 36, I think, 100 separate radio shows for 30 minutes or 60 minutes or more. And that's what it kind of looks like when it first gets started. So you are doing something brand new that I'm really excited to be part of as well, helping you build with them building it, because now the new state-of-the-art, if you will, communication system is also going to be online. So we do our internet radio shows. We have our newsletters and everything else just like you do, but I'm really interested in helping support everything that you're doing with your new project. So first, tell our Building Fortunes listening Citizens for Health radio audience a little bit about you and whatever we want to cover today. And by the way, since it's new subject, if we need to go over, we certainly can.
Okay, well, the I'm going to begin with just sketching very, very quickly the project I want to talk about, and then go a little bit into my background, and then we can go back and do some questions back and forth about that project. It is something called the Maven, which is it's a new platform which is just beginning to start up. People who are interested in pursuing it can go to the Maven and look for Jim or James Heckman. He is the originator of two significant sports sites online, Scout, and his other site is called Rivals, and they're pretty well known among people who are sports fans. And he's taking the same algorithm and putting it into play for broader social issues, including sports and then other things. We are going to be having a channel on the Maven called Transpartisan Voice, and it is about the transpartisan ideas that we've been talking about on this program for the last few weeks. The idea is to integrate left, right, order, and freedom into actual understanding of how our politics works. We've talked about a number of issues in that framework on this program, and the Maven channel, which Building Fortunes Radio is a partner in, is going to build an audience of people who are not happy with or do not feel satisfied with the heavy partisanship that's involved in our politics. Our argument is, of course, that the politics is not actually representing what's going on in the country. My partner and I, Laurie Chickering, the person who who are involved in launching this project, wrote a book in 2008 called Voice of the People, the Transpartisan Imperative in American Life. And that book set out with data and drawing on polling and so forth the fact that this country is not indeed divided. Its politics is divided, and mostly that politics is divided between the leadership of both parties and the country and the rest of the people in the country. We think in this current situation, about 27% of the public voted for Trump, a slightly more voted for Clinton, and the rest of the public, which is something in the neighborhood of 50 to 75%, depending on how you look at it. Many of the people who voted for Trump and Clinton are people who identify themselves as independents. They don't even identify with the parties. So between 50 and 75% of the American public does not identify with the two political parties. And that group is the one that is most dissatisfied with what's going on, and the partisan dynamic is underway. We're saying there is a transpartisan dynamic where the people who are dissatisfied with our current political debate can actually be heard and can be seen operating, and they're having impact and they're changing the shape of the politics and so on. That's what the Transpartisan Voice is about. And one of the major areas where that plays out is in the matter of health. We have a healthcare policy debate, which is called by the political elite, it's called about healthcare reform, and actually it's actually healthcare financing reform. It's about how to pay for healthcare, not how to improve healthcare. And most of the people in the country are dissatisfied with that debate that's going on in Congress. They're right inside our transpartisan group. So I put that all out there. Citizens for Health has been involved with supporting this. Several other groups have. They'll all be partners along with Building Fortunes Radio. And I come to this from having started in Washington as original Nader's Raider. And I wrote a book on the FDA called The Chemical Feast, Food Protection at the FDA. One of my personal accolades in life that I enjoy is that Time magazine called it the toughest report on a federal agency ever written. And from that, an enormous amount of, you know, I was involved, that book was an expression of and a part of an enormous amount of change that led to organic food and to acupuncture needles being approved in the U.S. and to a whole complementary alternative medicine evolution, which is now integrated into NIH, where there is an Office of Integrative Health. This is a huge movement that's underway, and it's going along outside of the strict limits of the partisan debate. My work in that has led to, you know, helping get Organic Food Production Act passed, getting the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act passed, working on nutrition labeling. All of those things have policy implications that are extremely important, and I bring it back around now to saying that we can use the transpartisan voice, Maven channel for communication, to get a voice into the political debate that is broader than the one that's purely partisan. And I want to be very clear, there's nothing wrong with being partisan. Partisan is great, and some of the strongest partisans make some of the strongest transpartisan. The transpartisan is willing to talk to a partisan transpartisan, willing to talk to somebody on the opposite side of them and discover that between them they are likely to come up with an idea that is better than either of the ideas that they're both pushing. So that's our driving force, and the Maven transpartisan voice is the expression of that idea in the social media internet community, and we believe it's going to have quite an impact on the way the debate in this country is carried out. So that's my background and my new project.
Perfect. Okay, good. So the people that are looking for that, because I looked for it as well, it's James Heckman, H-E-C-K-M-A-N. And then if you want to go directly to the website, you go to themaven.net. So themaven.net. And I know that they're putting all this stuff together as we speak. So you'll see as this recording is done, now if you're listening to the recording of this recording or the replay of this recording, it's probably going to be looking a lot differently because this is just what it looks like when it first gets started. And if you go to the coming soon section, you'll see the transpartisan voice like Jim Turner had referenced and be able to see a little bit there. I was kind of fascinated by the variety of topics that they are choosing to pick. So everything from, you know, marijuana and weed to transgender stuff to natural stuff like you think of things like the economy and the digital age. I'm looking forward to this heavy dialogue because I learn a lot more, too, when both sides are speaking. And this way I can kind of figure out what I need to do on my end, if you will, for making my own or formulating my own decisions. So I'm looking forward to this. Then also, I think there's going to be some kind of a business model behind this, Jim, as well. So
well,
is
yeah,
going to
if you
be
look
like
up
an alternative to YouTube?
Yeah, well, the business model behind this is that, in fact, the way the Internet has emerged and social media has emerged up until now, the content has essentially been provided for free, essentially for free. That is, you know, all the people that go on Facebook and all the people that go on Google, all the people that go on Alternet, all those people actually, it's a free content framework or a very minimal cost framework. And then that's pushing up a lot of money to the upper ends of the organizations. And so in the case you get somebody like Facebook with Zuckerberg and the Google folks and so on, they all turn out to be Amazon, they all turn out to be multi-billionaires. Well, that multi-billionaireness that they've created is the direct result of operating on huge audiences that are created for free. That is, they come and they pour their hearts out, and then basically that list is sold to an advertiser, and the advertiser pays so much per each one of those people, and no money goes to those people. So the business model of Maven is to take two-thirds of the income, of the gross income that comes into the enterprise, and return it back in various ways to content providers. It's a shift in the way of looking at the Internet. My experience over time is that it's a natural shift. That's what happened in the food area. You had the same kind of thing with health food stores. Then they were charging 200% markups. And then when Whole Foods came along, they created a trade association. And then they created natural food stores. Then they created a trade association. Then created Whole Foods. And that was trading at about a 35% markup, which was way below what health food stores had. But it happened to be about 12% higher than what supermarkets had. So you had a much more costly food compared to supermarkets, but much less costly compared to stores that were designed to sell health food. Same thing's now happening in the Internet. You're going to find that more and more content's going to be paid for in one way or another. That's what business models are about as they're emerging. And that's happening here with the Maven emerging, and I suspect I think the Maven will be very successful, and I suspect there will be other copycats of that as things start to unfold. But that business model is an important that's an important evolution of our information culture.
And I think that's important, you know, for people like myself, because I watched, you know, we're all witnessing the evolution of how these things turn up, and they're happening real time right in front of us, and we can see we can see it as we go with our own eyes. And we saw how after the election, it appeared that there was a real big attack against people that were anti-establishment. So whether it's anti-real news or whatever. And a lot of those YouTube people, so let's use YouTube as the content creator, a lot of those YouTube people found that their income was taken away from them because they were demonetized. So then also my choices, quote-unquote, are being taken away because Google or Yahoo or whatever it might be, Facebook, are choosing what they want me to see, or they're being like my parents saying, this is what I want people to be able to see, or these guys are on the fringe. So maybe opinions, even if I thought they were crazy, aren't being suppressed or are being suppressed. So what I look at the Maven being is a place for those people who have content they want to speak about things to be able to have a place for them to go, and then they even monetize their content because they're good at what they do. They're sacrificing their time and their lives for what they do. They need this platform so they can afford to be able to do that. Because one of the fastest ways, of course, you know, Google's just snuffing YouTube is snuffing people out because it's taking the income away from them. So over
now,
to you.
Remember, YouTube's owned by Google at this point.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Go ahead. Keep going.
No. So this scenario is you watched it as it happened. It was kind of like the media, if you will, was helping, you know, President Obama was one of the first presidential candidates that had the opportunity to use the media. He beat the pants off of the old man, John McCain, who was the president, if you will, at that time, or president-elect at that time, or candidate at that time, using the wrong terms. But he beat the pants off of them because they were slow to come to the platform. So Obama had bazillions of people, you know, throw in a little bit of money. Sanders did a good job at it as well, but was squashed by Hillary Clinton, you know, as everybody sees now. But the reality was is that these social media platforms were groomed and developed and natured by the Obama kinds of administration, and maybe even funded in hands by how things were going. And then when all of a sudden Donald Trump took over, it's kind of like, whoa, there was a wake-up call and a real rebellion against anybody that was part of that whole entire process. So we watched it single-handedly. Anybody that was opinionated against the establishment was now fake news, and anybody that was opinionated or not or whatever against the establishment or the news had their videos demonetized, and they saw their incomes disappear almost overnight. And these are people that spent, you know, months, years, several years developing content and loyal followers, and all of a sudden now they're all having to try to figure out what they're going to do. So if the Maven wasn't around, it would have to be invented as a platform for their voices as well as for their incomes. So over to you.
Well, yeah, and a lot of the people coming to the Maven are people from Facebook, let's say, who have very large followings. And somebody came over not too long ago who had, I think, 2 million followers. And the point is that people are unhappy with the way that this whole thing is structured, and they're looking for somewhere else to go. And what Heckman did is figured out that you create a place for them to go, and as the old saying goes, they will come. And they're coming, and it's interesting. And I just underscore that this is like our Transpartisan Voice is still in beta. It will particular interview that you and I are having, Peter, will be the first thing posted on the Transpartisan Voice Maven, along with all of the other partners that are coming on and so forth. It will be one of the first things. And the people listening to it through the Maven will be listening to a replay about what we're talking about now. And what we're talking about now is a week ahead of time, but they'll be hearing it when it's happening. And as people begin to shift over, that audience will get bigger and bigger for the Maven, and that new model will start to have an impact and start monetizing other people. One of the other things that I wanted to point out about what you said about Obama using the internet and then Trump using Twitter, when a person is running for president, they are not the establishment, they are the counter-establishment. When they are elected president, immediately, when he said he'll take the oath of office and he says, I'll carry that oath out, immediately that person becomes the establishment. And what's interesting about watching Trump, and I think it happened with Obama too, but in a much less audacious way. And Obama and both of them came into power, and suddenly their ability to be critiquers of what's going on was severely changed. Now they were the actual perpetrators of what was going on. And the limitations on action are much, much tighter when you're a person holding office than when you're a person seeking office. And what Trump is finding is that he has an instinct to be anti-establishment, and unfortunately, at this moment, he is the establishment. And so you see in almost everything he does, you see that split where he'll say he'll attack something and then he'll turn around and support it. And when he was attacking it, he was seeing it as outside himself as part of the establishment. Then when he was supporting it, he sees it inside himself as part of the establishment. And I think it's in many ways, and we have this journal, the Transpartisan Review, which is a backbone of Transpartisan Voice. We laid out, Laurie Chickering and I laid out a whole analysis of what we think is going on, premised on the notion that in a very significant way, Trump is far more an effect than a cause. Trump's advent actually expresses more about the society and the culture than it does about Trump per se, and even about Trump's policies. And what I think we learn about the culture is that there are lots and lots and lots of things going on that when you have a narrow media, you don't hear about. But when you have a robust media, suddenly things break into view that were always there but below the horizon suddenly are now visible. And I think it's a very interesting situation for American democracy to confront because the basic premises of our culture really drive for those kinds of diverse opinions being seen and heard. And the very mechanisms of the culture that manage it try to suppress or to shape those points of view. And that's a tension that's always been there. We call it freedom and order in our transpartisan framework. And we say the left and the right is working always to integrate themselves with freedom and order. And we have four quadrants of people looking at it rather than two, and free right and free left and order right and order left. And one of the things that's confusing to the public is that many of the political battles have the free right and the free left on one side and the order right and the order left on the other side, and they keep getting reported in the media as left-right battles or strange battles or here's some left-wingers who got some right-wingers to support them, when we're saying actually there are four components, and in order to really understand what's happening, you need to see all four of those components to understand any particular issue. And in fact, that's what the Transpartisan Voice is going to be creating, and having space for everybody from all different points of view be able to come in and make arguments that can be integrated over time.
And I think that's a wonderful thing, because obviously we make decisions on the information that's fed to us. And if we're only fed one type of information, then we can't really make the decisions that we need to be able to figure out how to manage our ways in these tight, tough economic type of situations, or where there's decisions that you're making. So I'm sure they're going to have things on health and nutrition and vaccines and stuff that we've talked about before, and I'm sure they'll talk about stuff like the politics and other things like the economy and the digital age and maybe cryptocurrency. So I'm really looking forward to experts in the field discussing the things, so I can go to one place and get access to all of those things. So for those people that are listening in, if you're listening in on the Maven, then you already know where you are. But if you're listening in on our Building Fortunes radio audience, you can go to themaven.net, and you'll see that page as it evolves. Like we said, we're doing this recording even before it's officially been launched, and you'll see how it evolves over time. So just like Building Fortunes Radio started in December of 2012, the Maven is starting in, I guess it's going to be close to November of 2017, and you'll watch how it evolves over time. And if you're a content creator, definitely take a look at this and see what you can muster, especially if you have some following, because there's a lot of people that are looking for a place to be able to earn money for being able to provide the content. And they're not looking to get rich. They're looking to be able to provide themselves for a livelihood that'll afford them to do the things that they love to do. And like I said, they're not looking for Rolls Royces and huge yachts and things like that. Many of them are looking for the funding to be able to travel back and forth, to be able to hold a microphone and talk about whatever it is they want to talk about and coordinate that as well. Okay, Jim, so we only have about 3 minutes left. What else would you like to share with us today?
Well, very quickly, I just noticed the interesting debate that's going on now about healthcare financing. The president issued an executive order saying cutting off the insurance payments. Two members of Congress, one Republican, one Democrat, proposed legislation that would make those contributions, support payments mandatory. And interestingly enough, the president supported that initially. Then he raised questions about it later and so on. The Speaker of the House was cool toward it, but the most conservative leader of the House welcomed it with some possibilities. And I will say to you right now, what I just described to you is the transpartisan matrix that we use to analyze virtually every issue. And what we've got going here is that people who feel that the individual should have the freedom to make choices are lining up on one side, and the people who are more concerned about how we finance the whole thing are lining up on the other side. And what we need here is to figure out how to integrate them. So this is a very, very fascinating issue to watch the development of, because in every instance that we talk about, all four quadrants have a legitimate position. The trick is that all four of them are a contribution to the ultimate policy, and our process currently right now is not robust enough to include all four of them in coming up with an outcome, so we end up with these rancorous and difficult debates. My suspicion is that they all come out pretty much where they would have come out if everybody had sat around a table calmly and discussed it. But we have to go through a lot of craziness in order to get to the outcome that was probably there all the time anyway. So the healthcare thing, watch that. It's interesting. We'll be doing things on Transpartisan Voice once it's up after next Friday. That's one of the things Citizens for Health is going to follow. And Citizens for Health will be a key player in the Transpartisan Voice channel.
Now, for the normal or regular people listening in that aren't maybe as politically savvy as someone like yourself, Jim, and somebody that's not following, tell me if I'm close to describing the problem that Donald Trump basically had before. So I'm going to use a fictitious but fundamentally accurate example. When Obamacare came out, if you couldn't afford your insurance, say, for instance, someone's insurance went up to $1,500 a month for a family, which is not uncommon. Many people that I speak to spend that much more or that much or more. So say $1,500 a month is just for my fictitious but fundamentally okay example. If they couldn't afford the insurance on their own and they got Obamacare, maybe Obamacare paid a portion of it and then they had to pay a portion of it, which was the way it was set up. And the portion the family paid was $300. The portion Obamacare paid was $1,200 a month. So if you take a look at that and you say, wait a minute, that's great for the family. No complaints for the family. They get they couldn't afford it before, now they have coverage. Great for the family. But who's paying the extra $1,200 a month? And $1,200 a month multiplied by a year is like a lot of money a year paid to an insurance company. And who's paying this? And I think the answer was Obama said, well, we really don't know, but we're going to do it anyway. And Trump is saying, that's illegal. You can't do it that way. You have to have some way of paying it. So we're going to stop that because the insurance companies are taking the money. The families are taking the policy, but the taxpayer is the one who's getting hosed, and we have to figure that out. And I think that's what we're referencing.
But that's one of the four quadrants. That's the argument from one of the four quadrants. Another quadrant makes the argument that, in fact, the deal that was made, well, there was a deal made. The deal was made is everybody has to buy insurance. A lot of people that have to buy insurance can't afford it, so we'll create subsidies. And those subsidies were created. And the idea is that if everybody doesn't pay into the insurance pool, then we can't have an insurance pool. So the family that if you take away the $1,200 that's paid to the insurance companies, and by law, all that $1,200 has to be distributed to supporting the families. None of it can be taken by the insurance company. So that's just by law. Now understand, we always have several debates on it. One is, what's the policy? Two is, how good is the mechanism for implementing that policy? Number three, how effectively do the people implementing the policy follow the principles that follow the rules about implementing it, and how well do the rules themselves express the actual policy? Those are all major debates that go on. So in this instance, the policy issue is that if you don't have everybody on the insurance rolls, then you do not have the ability to provide anything for anyone. Because what happens is only sick people buy insurance, healthy people don't. And as a result of that, and it's usually a healthy person tends to be a younger person, and so what happens is in the culture at large is that the younger person says, I'm not going to pay because I'm not sick. Then one day they get sick, and then they say, okay, I'm going to pay next month, and now they've got insurance. That really really hoses the taxpayer because they're going along for all these years without contributing anything, and then they get sick, and then they take all the money out of the program. The result of that is what the whole system you just described from one quadrant is designed to address. I like to go to, with this transpartisan thinking that we're putting into the mix, I like to go to the to a sort of a supra-policy framework, an ultra-policy. The problem with health insurance is that health in general as a maintenance idea, the idea of being a healthy person, does not fit the insurance idea. Because let's do what you did. I'll create a fantasy reality. Insurance basically starts from a fire insurance base. You've got 1,000 houses, and you know by underwriting, that is statistically, you know that 10 of them are going to burn down. But what you don't know is which 10 is it going to be. So all 1,000 people put money into a pool. And the pool is designed to be large enough to cover 10 burned down houses. And that's a number can be figured out. It's going to take, X number of dollars. That 1,000 is divided to that X number of dollars, and everybody in that group puts that amount of money into the pool, and then as houses burn down, they're reimbursed out of the pool. The thing that works there is that the individual whose house burned down didn't know when they put their amount of money, their 1,000th of the money in, they didn't know they were the ones that were going to get 1,000 times that out, nor did anyone else. But the people who don't have their houses burned down basically bought insurance that if their house was burned down, they would get the money to pay for it. That's the model for insurance. That model doesn't work for health because everybody in the entire pool in every way, shape, or form wants to be sure that they do everything they can to make sure that houses don't burn down. I mean, that's what they do. And so they're all working hard to make the houses not burn down, and then something happens. You know, a light fixture goes haywire, or a lightning strikes or something, and a house burns down. And we know because of underwriting that 10 out of 1,000 are going to burn down. On the health side, if you are being reimbursed or if you're being paid out of the insurance pool to maintain your health, there is no limit to the amount of money you can take in. So one of the things that's being groped for in this health debate, and it's in this whole new thing that's come up where you have the Republican and Democrat have proposed legislation